The race to Anvard was very grueling for the horses. As they topped each ridge, they found another valley and another ridge beyond it. And though they knew they were going in more or less the right direction, no one knew how far it was to Anvard. From the top of the second ridge, Shasta looked back again.
Rabadash and his army are at the river now. They're trying to find a way to cross over. Quick! We might as well not have come at all if we don't reach Anvard in time. Oh, hurry, Bree! Hurry! Remember, you're a war horse!
Both horses were doing, if not all they could, all they thought they could, which is not quite the same thing. Bree and Gwyn thundered, side by side, over the turf. At that moment, everyone's feelings were completely altered by a sound from behind.
A lion! Oh, hurry, Bree! It's a lion!
Bree had already recognized the sound. His eyes gleamed red and his ears lay flat back on his skull as he now discovered that he'd not really been going fast, not quite as fast as he could. Shasta felt the change at once. Now they were going all out. In a few seconds, they were well ahead of Gwyn.
Go, Bree, go!
Shasta looked over his shoulder. A huge, tawny creature, its body low to the ground like a cat streaking across a lawn, was behind them. And it was nearer every second and half second. The lion was now close enough to snap at Gwyn's hind legs. And there was no hope now in her foaming, flecked, wide-eyed face.
Stop, Bree! We must go back! We must help Gwyn!
Bree must not have heard him and didn't slow down. Shasta, worried about Gwyn and Aravis, slipped his feet out of the stirrups and jumped. It hurt horribly and nearly winded him. But before he knew how much it hurt him, he was staggering back to help Aravis. Aravis, Gwyn and the lion were now almost on top of Shasta. Before they reached him, the lion rose on its hind legs, larger than you would have believed a lion could be. Aravis seemed to be trying to draw her sword. The lion jabbed her with its right paw. Shasta could see all the terrible claws extended. The lion was tearing at her shoulder once, twice. Shasta, half mad with horror, managed to lurch towards the brute. He had no weapon, so he shouted out idiotically at the lion, as one would to a dog.
Go home! Go home! Shoot! Shoot!
For a fraction of a second, he was staring right into its wide-open, raging mouth. Then, to his utter astonishment, the lion, still on its hind legs, checked itself and suddenly turned head over heels, picked itself up and rushed away.
Oh, thank goodness!
Shasta then turned and saw something he'd not noticed before. A smooth green wall, about 10 feet high. In the middle of that wall, there was a gate, open. In the middle of the gateway stood a tall man, dressed down to his bare feet in a robe colored like autumn leaves, leaning on a straight staff. His beard fell almost to his knees. Gwyn was just entering the gate, stumbling and nearly fainting. Aravis was still in the saddle, but her back was covered with blood.
Come in! Come in!
Coming!
Welcome, my son.
Are you King Lune of Arkenland?
No, I am the Hermit of the Southern March. Oh. And now, my son, waste no time on questions, but obey. This damsel is wounded. Your horses are spent. But Rabadash is at this moment finding a ford over the Winding Arrow River. If you run now without a moment's rest, you'll still be in time to warn King Loon.
Run? Now?
Yes.
But... Oh, where is the king?
Look through the courtyard. There is the northern gate. Open it and go straight ahead. Always straight ahead, over level or steep, over smooth or rough, over dry or wet. I know by my art that you will find King Loon straight ahead. But run. Run. Always run.
Right. Run. Run. Always run.
And now for you, my friend.
Run. Always run.
When Shasta went through the gate, he found a slope of grass and a little heather running up before him to some trees. He had nothing to think about now and no plans to make. He had only to run, and that was quite enough. His limbs were shaking. A terrible stitch was beginning in his side, and the sweat that kept dropping into his eyes blinded them and made them smart. He was unsteady on his feet, too, and more than once he nearly turned his ankle on a loose stone. The trees were thicker now than they had yet been. The sun had gone in without making it any cooler. It had become one of those hot, grey days.
What's that? People! At last!
There were about 15 or 20 people in a wide glade. All were gentlemen in green hunting dress with their horses, some in the saddle and some standing by their horses' heads. In the center, someone was holding the stirrup for a man to mount, and the man he was holding it for was the jolliest, fat, apple-cheeked, twinkling-eyed king you could imagine.
Corin! My son! And on foot, and in rags. What?
No, not Prince Corin. I know I'm like him. I saw His Highness in Tashbar, and he sends his greetings.
This is most extraordinary.
It certainly is, my king.
Are you King Loon?
I am.
Lord King, you must fly to Anbard and shut the gates. Your enemies are upon you. A Rabadash and 200 horses.
Have you assurance of this, boy?
My own eyes. I've seen them. I raced them all the way from Tashbarn.
On foot?
Our horses are with the hermit.
But I don't...
Question him no more, Dorin. I see truth in his face. We must ride for it, gentlemen. A spare horse there for the boy.
Here, my liege.
You can ride fast, friend.
Yes, your highness.
He mounts a horse like a true horseman.
Aye.
I'll warrant there's a noble blood in him.
His blood, aye. There's the point. I will want to know more of this boy when we arrive in Anbard. Quickly now! We've no time to lose!
To horse!
Come on!
Get on horse! Hurry! We're losing them! Yeah! Yeah! Oh, you're not a talking horse, are you? Oh, bother! Come on, we're losing them! Yeah!